Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here, live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. Waiting for more information from Rick Tocchet about various player availability for the weekend. And of course, if we get some Rick Tocchet audio in after the Canucks practice at UBC, we'll turn that around and play it for you as soon as we can. But before that, lots of texts and questions coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text line. And Jeff, the lumberjack from Langley, texts in, what direction do you see the Canucks go if they don't make the playoffs, and how do they do it in the offseason? So I think it's an interesting question because, and this is not, we talked about this yesterday, the playoffs matter a lot to the players and it matters to the organization. But I also don't think it's going to herald a big change of direction if they miss the playoffs. Like, I think the direction is the same whether or not they get in, which is we want to add an impact forward in their mid-20s with team control, and we want to try to be good again next year by fixing our offense. We got a good defensive foundation in place. We've got Quinn Hughes. Let's hope Elias Pettersson has figured it out. We like our coach. Let's add some forward, some pop offensively, and go from there. Like, I think that's the play for this management group, whether they make the playoffs or whether they miss. I don't know that it's going to have a big impact on what they choose to do in the offseason. I guess if you make and you pull off an upset or something, does that change things? Who knows? But yeah, the players want to make the playoffs. I'm not saying it's not important or it doesn't have stakes. That's not what I mean when I say it doesn't change things. I think management's pretty locked in, regardless of how the final standings shake out here after 82 games.
Yeah, so look, if we assume, I always like to start with any questions like this, just looking at cap space and sort of options. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I like to begin. If we assume a $95.5 million cap, which is where the PA and the NHL agreed that it would rest, and we'll see if worsening economic climate or tariff policy has any impact on that. Canucks will effectively enter the offseason with about $14 million in cap space and I think 19 one-way contracts, right? So that's Demko, Hironik, goal. Demko, Shelovs, and Thatcher Demko.
And Lankinen.
What did I say?
Demko and Thatcher Demko.
Right. Demko, Shelovs, and Lankinen. On defense, Hironik, Mancini, Marcus Pettersson, Elias Pettersson. That's an entry level, but still. Tyler Myers, Quinn Hughes. Now, I think we can also add in Tom Vilander, most likely, most probably. And then wingers signed one way or forward signed one way for next year would include DeBrusk, Pettersson, Hoglander, Hedl, Drew O'Connor, Dakota Joshua,
Garland,
Bluger, Sherwood, and Nils Amon on a one way. So that's a fairly robust, I guess you can add Linus Karlsson as of today as well.
And in terms of like guys who have been regulars this year, that's nine dudes already signed who've been regulars this year.
And you'll notice I didn't bring up Jonathan Lekkarimäki, who 100% will factor into the club's NHL level plans next season. Now, that's not to say he spends the whole year in the NHL if he doesn't perform up to that level, but he's going to get a shot. They're going to leave a warm roster spot open, somewhere cozy for him to start.
Yes.
So with that amount, that's 19, but really it could be 21 NHL level options if you include Vilander and Karlsson on. You're really like at the margins looking to fill out your roster. You know, we're talking three goalies, we're talking more than six defenders. Like realistically, we're talking about the club getting like a Forbert type 7, 8, 6, 7. Right, like a veteran reinforcement guy, especially if you're possibly Derek Forbert, especially if you're looking at Vilander and Elias Pettersson both being regulars. You probably want to go eight deep anyway.
Yeah,
but you especially want those eight guys to be vets. Although I think Mancini maybe. So Mancini's maybe 7, and then you're keeping Forbert. That would be 8. So that makes sense. That's pretty strong. That's a robust defense group. Shelovs, Demko, Lankinen. I guess you have to sort through exactly what things look like with Demko on the other side of him hitting extension eligibility. We'll see. I think we're going to learn a lot about the club's future plans for Shelovs just in the next 24 hours, because what's the argument for him not starting against Chicago? If he doesn't start against Chicago, I don't see how you can consider him an NHL-level option for you next year, in which case you need to bring in a third goaltender again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the forwards. So really, it's like $14 million in cap space. Maybe you spend $1 million of that
on your defensive, your $1 to $2 million
on defense.
Yeah.
And the rest of it goes to forward. Now, do you like Nils Höglander as a top six guy? Permanent fixture?
That might be the kind of bet you have to make because you want to make a big splash elsewhere. You know what
right.
I mean? So, okay, we're going to go all in on one of the top UFAs. That eats up so much of our cap space that we're going to kind of cross our fingers and hope that Höglander can be a top six guy.
Okay.
I don't love it, but I can see that being more compelling than, well, we'll go mid-range on two top six guys. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that Hoaglander's in the bottom six.
But we like Höglander and we like DeBrusk. So then in you're saying yes on Höglander. Are you
sure.
saying yes on DeBrusk? Obviously
yes.
You are. Okay. Are you saying yes on Drew O'Connor?
Top six? No.
Dakota Joshua?
No.
Lekker Mäki? Not
nope.
ideal, right?
Garland,
yes. So that's you. So you're short one top six winger.
Yeah.
Are you saying yes to Filippito,
no.
top six center?
No.
Okay.
That is number one priority, is bring in a center.
A top
clearly,
two line center.
Clearly better than Filippito.
A top two line
yes.
center and another top six winger.
Yep.
Okay. So you've got... And you've got $14 million to do it. That's a relatively healthy amount. So you're realistically, we're talking about priority ads for the Canucks this summer. Vet depth defenseman,
mm-hmm.
two top six forwards, and ideally an additional player, I think, with like just a mentality guy, just like a big body
sure.
guy who brings some leadership, and hopefully it's one of your top six centers.
That would
or
be amazing.
Top six forwards.
Yeah.
But somebody, I think, just to bring a little bit of extra bite to the group. So... Four players, $14 million. You can do that. I mean that. So coming back around to it, the club has options. $14 million is more than you need to bring back Besser and Pew Suter. Maybe one of them is a partial answer to your top six forward needs, or maybe you find two guys and you are able to do Pew Suter, or maybe you find
sure.
you do Besser and you're able to bring in an additional top six center. Club's got the cap flexibility to solve their issues. What they don't really have is the assets to go out and like compete in the Dylan Cousins market
yes.
if the Ottawa Senators are dangling Josh Norris.
And especially because that's the
or
tough thing
in the
about-
Josh Norris market because
yeah.
the Buffalo Sabres are dangling Dylan Cousins.
Now, does it work? Does the leaving Buffalo like magic work if you weren't drafted by Buffalo? How long do you have to have spent in Buffalo before you become eligible for the center leaving the Sabres glow up?
I think you need to have stuck around long enough
for the spirit to have drained from your
yeah,
body,
to have had at least one of those truly miserable, like Sam Reinhart style
yeah.
media availabilities.
If Dylan Cousins, like,
well, he already is killing it.
I know, but if this is like, that's going to be absolutely incredible.
How about
if
that?
They did it again?
How about them Ottawa Senators?
Yeah.
Real changing of the guard vibe in the East. I mean, we'll see if Columbus and the New York Rangers, I feel if Ottawa and Columbus ultimately emerge, or Ottawa, if two of Ottawa, Columbus, or Detroit emerge as the playoff teams and neither the Rangers or the Bruins make it, that is like a massive changing of the guard in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Massive.
Huge, for sure.
Anyway, so coming back to it, how do the Canucks feel about their options? Because what they've done in terms of laying this out, in terms of how they've created their flexibility, like the fact that they're going into the offseason with $14 million in cap flex, and it's like, well, we really need to save the majority of it to take big swings on two top six forwards,
mm-hmm.
and they've kind of got a couple guys who loosely fit that description in Besser and Pew Suter, but didn't even work to get them done before the deadline, and clearly have been like very mindful of term, have not really made Besser an offer that we would see as market value based on what we'd expect.
They've never shown like an urgency to get it done. An openness to doing it, but never like, oh, let's get this done.
100%. And so I think that's telling, right? Like, I think that is telling. And I think the underlying assumption here is we believe that we are better than the record says we are as a team.
Mm-hmm.
We lost Hronek for 6 weeks. Dakota Joshua dealt with surgery to remove a cancerous tumor in the summer, and has, you know, just when he was looking like he was finding his game, got hurt again for an extended stretch. So he hasn't brought what we expected, but we still believe in the player. Hronek's missed a huge amount of time. Quinn Hughes has had multiple extended absences now, and probably isn't playing at 100%. Elias Pettersson, well, we need to get him back on track. He hasn't been back on track. Filip Hedl, look, he made a solid first impression, but
Rick Tocchet coached the offense out of him.
No, but we always knew there were going to be limitations with asking him to be a second-line center. We didn't bring him in thinking we were getting a second-line center. We were hoping he could grow into the role. We still believe he could grow into the role, but ultimately we're going to need to insulate that a little bit better. Demko dealt with a miserable injury situation. If we have a Demko Lankinen battery going into next season, and Demko has a good summer and he stays healthy down the stretch of this year, we feel like we have better goaltending than most teams. In fact, we feel like we have an elite tandem. And with all of that and the structure we'll play with and what we've done with the defense, if we can get some goal scoring into this lineup, we think we're going to be back up the standings, rocket quickly back up the standings. I don't even know that that's thin.
I don't, like, it's hard to find too many premises that you, like, strongly disagree with in there. You know what I mean?
It's a perfectly reasonable bet.
You know, like, it's the kind of thing where it's like a parlay, where they all look great individually, but you stack them all up, there's a decent chance that one of them doesn't hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you need to...
But it's not, none of it is wish casting. None of it's like hope and prayer stuff.
None of it's wish casting, provided you can successfully graft more speed and snarl and scoring touch into your top six. Like, overhauling the star level contributors, the contributors who score goals, is one of the hardest things to do, right? Especially when you're a little bit asset poor in terms of making trades to acquire those guys.
And I think that's really significant, because that's the way you do it without the cap price spiraling out of control. You go trade for the players who are either already signed long term at a reasonable number, or are RFAs and have team control. Like, whatever the case is, they're inherently cheaper salary cap wise than going out and spending an unrestricted free agency. So again, not to relitigate the trade deadline, but that was why I was so keen on them trading Besser, to restock those assets that you could that could then be part of the solution to filling these spots,
so that you can get in the mix the next time a JT Miller situation. Like, we talk about this every year. Like, how do you jockey to position yourself to win the sweepstakes when the unexpected star player who needs a change of scenery becomes available? We see it almost every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this year, it was like, how do the Canucks position themselves to get that guy? But the guy was from their own team.
Yes.
You know, like, that's tough. But nonetheless, you know, looking for the Jack Eichel trade, looking for the Sam Reinhart trade, looking for the Sam Bennett trade, right? I mean, the Stanley Cup winners are littered with teams that were able to pounce on those guys. And I one of my sort of concerns here is the Canucks don't have the assets. I worry they don't have the assets. Like, how do you win the bidding if Buffalo's involved, given their absolute, you know, cacophony effect? Like, basically you need the guy who's getting dealt to have some level of control over the situation, and to want to come to Vancouver, which, you know, tough. So on and on we go. I think this team will continue to push forward in the belief that they are better than their record shows, that they've been unlucky this season, and that they can rocket ship themselves back up the standings if they can find the right fits that play the right style and fit in well with their group. And Pettersson gets back on track, because obviously hinges on Pettersson.
Everything is moot if that doesn't happen.
Correct.
You're not replacing that, certainly in the offseason.
So there's a lot of things that do need to hit. I don't even think it's thin. I'm not even critical. Like, oftentimes I'll go through like these paths and it's like, that is for sure the path forward here. But I actually don't think Like we were discussing on the crossover, the idea of rebuilding. No one is going to call for this team to be rebuilt right now.
No.
The argument, what I think is fair to do is to relitigate the direction the Canucks chose when management shifted. Because I think if there's a concern with the case that I laid out, right, it's that it feels a little low ceiling,
mm-hmm.
especially in a Western Conference where the Minnesota Wild are about to get $20 million in dead cap space lifted off of their books and be a hugely desirable destination, as they are every time they have cap flexibility. The Utah Hockey Club, whether you buy my takes on them this season or not, are absolutely coming. They look like a team that should be way better next season, or at least on a linear path toward possible improvement, right?
Well, and motivated. Like, very motivated to
motivated
improve.
To buy, yes. Flexibility to buy, lots of assets to win the sweepstakes the next yep. time. They kept their powder dry this season, but how long does that last? That's a team that looks durably ascendant. You had the Anaheim Ducks take a big step forward this season in terms of results. They look to me to be like a good coach, an average NHL coach away from being on a similar path to Ottawa, or like Ottawa under Travis Green, or what you've seen in Utah under Turigny this season. So Colorado we know is good. Vegas we know is good. Edmonton we know is good. The Kings we know are going to punch above their weight with a low ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
The Minnesota Wild look like a team that could very rapidly get themselves back on track given their young talent and the cap flexibility that's about to come off their books. You've got, you know, Anaheim, a young team that could improve quickly or profiles that way. You've got Utah, a young team that could improve quickly or looks that way. You've got Calgary likely to add guys like Parekh, right? I mean, there's a world in a couple years where all the assets that the Flames have accumulated over the years mean that the next time these two teams play a meaningful game in March, they have some answers for the Hughes-Pettersson factor that they didn't, right? Who am I missing? Because I'm only at 7.
In the West?
Yes. Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Who probably will lose Oilers.
I'm going to be honest. I blacked out during that list. So you're going to have to remember who you said yourself.
My point being is, is it enough to go forward with a low ceiling
yeah.
approach given that there's like 7 teams we feel pretty confident are better than the Canucks now? None of them profile like a Rangers or a Bruins team where it's like they're calcified and old. I mean, Vegas would be the closest one, but I don't view them that way at all, to be totally honest with you, given their...
Well, and they're always just so aggressive that, like, if any team can avoid that, I think it would be Vegas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they already let Marchessault walk. They traded Riley Smith once. Like, they'll be aggressive to avoid that fate.
And they're good at landing their guys, and they have both one of the best defense cores in hockey and some of the best center depth in hockey. Like, what they need is a couple Sherwood-type hits, and it's like, wow, that's a championship-caliber team again. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's the easy stuff to do, right? The Canucks need 2 top 6 forwards for this, and Pettersson to bounce back. For this to hit, like, the Canucks have more question marks than the 7 teams ahead of them that we already think are better, and probably more, frankly, than Anaheim, who are a coach away, and Utah, who are, you know, a big swing to upgrade their top 6, ideally a second line left wing away. Right? I mean, maybe a Schmaltz upgrade. Maybe you want 2 wingers mm-hmm. if you're Utah before we're talking about them joining that. So I think the approach makes sense, and I think it could work if that's how they handle it, and I expect them to handle it that way.
Yes.
I think my concern is, can you improve enough? Can you hit enough of the things you need to hit to outpace Anaheim and Utah in your rearview mirror, or to reel in, especially in your division, LA, Edmonton,
Vegas.
And yeah. I think that's a big ask, even if you're able to be as efficient in terms of your pro scouting evaluation as this club has, and even though you've left yourself with the flexibility cap-wise, I think, to, in a relatively straightforward fashion, address your biggest needs.
Yeah, it's a big ask, but as you said...
This was a good text into the inbox, by the way. We did a whole half hour on it.
We did a whole segment. It's a big ask, but as you said, with no one's going to be calling for the rebuild, it's also the right path. I think everyone agrees. You know what I mean? It's more like... Yeah, you have Hughes, and you hope you have Pettersson back. Try to do something with that while you have Hughes for the next couple of years instead of rebuilding.
Yeah.
So to say that there's lots of ways it could go wrong, yeah, of course there are. I'm not like criticizing your take here or anything. It's just, don't mistake that for, if someone's listening and being like, oh, then what should they do instead? It's like, well, no, they should still do this. They should just go in very clear about the risks associated with it and the ways that it could go wrong. Because it's tricky. At any time, your plan is land impact guy in free agency. That's a very risky plan. That's a very, very risky plan.
Well, let me frame it to you this way, Jamie. Would you I'm going to get you to put on your Jim Rutherford hat.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know what that looks like. Maybe it's like a Sherlock Holmes hat or something.
Okay.
And I want to ask you this. In his shoes, would you feel any temptation to hedge this offseason?
This offseason? No. Like, well, so what would hedging look like?
Well, maybe you're not chasing Sam Bennett at 8x9 million. Because what happens if Pettersson doesn't bounce back and Hughes decides to depart and gives you an ultimatum in 12 months,
yeah,
and you're stuck with a guy in his early 30s who's never mm-hmm. scored 50 points in a season?
I just don't think
at big, big money.
Like, if you're going to hedge, just go to Quinn Hughes and be like, hey, we're going to significantly retool over the next 2 years, but we still believe in you. And try to pitch him on that. You know what I mean? Rather than hedging. Like, hedging to me is you're drawing dead in both directions. So why do it? Either take the swing. Like, take the swing one way or another. Take the swing on trying to make this team a contender with Quinn Hughes in the next 2 years. Or take the swing on, like, fully pitching a youth movement built around Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson to him and hoping that he likes that enough to stick around.
Yeah, he doesn't.
I agree. But, like, hedging, what does hedging
get you? You don't have to pitch that.
But what does hedging get you? You know what I mean? So you miss out and you like he's pissed off because you miss out and then you're slightly more flexible. Like, I don't know.
Oh, just you're materially more flexible.
It doesn't seem worth it to me. It doesn't seem worth it.
Okay.
I'd do it. I'd go all in. I'd take your shot. Because Quinn Hughes is not, you know, the sixth best defenseman. It's not like, oh, we might lose Rasmus Dahlin here.
No, no,
you
no.
Know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is truly like, who knows when your franchise will have a player
no, no, no.
this good again.
We all agree. We right? all agree. Fire all weapons to keep Quinn Hughes.
Yes. And no hedging. Do not hedge. You don't hedge on Quinn Hughes. That's pretty simple for me. Just do it. Do everything you can. Be as aggressive as possible to try to put a winner around him in the next 2 years. All right, we'll take a break here. We will hear from Rick Tocchet in the next segment. I also just want to pass this along. Noah Strang had this quote that popped up on my timeline from Canucks practice. Tyler Myers says Victor Mancini is probably the strongest guy on the Canucks. So I don't know if they were doing like feats of strength or what, but there you go. Victor Mancini, apparently the strongest player on the Vancouver Canucks. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet in the next segment. Janpro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, Janpro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. More on the other side here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Mike Halford
and Jason Brough.
Join us for Halford and Brough in the Morning weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Sportsnet 650.
Or on demand anytime through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dimitri is going to join us at 1:30 in studio to wrap up the week. But as mentioned, Canucks practiced out at UBC earlier today. Lots to get into in terms of player health and availability for the weekend. So let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Tyler's, I upgraded to a probable. Who's the other guy, sorry?
Junior.
And Junior's full go. Like, you know, he cleared, so he's good.
So what was it? What was the decision for him to come out of that game?
Well, when he got dinged, one or two shifts, and he was dealing with the flu before, so they weren't quite sure if it was concussion or flu. So, you know, for precautionary reasons, we kept him out. Like, so we realized that he passed the concussion test, and it seems okay.
I know you said recently you'd take Quinn at 80%. Is he 80%?
That's a good question. I don't know. Like, you know, the way he's been talking lately, it seems more. But listen, I don't think he's ever going to be feeling 100%. And you know, and like I told you guys, this time of year, I'm sure other players and other teams are have the same thing. But you know, he obviously, what I'm amazed, he hasn't really had. I don't think he's had a full team practice in a month, maybe one. And to be able to do what he does, that's hard to do. So.
Everyone can see what his abilities are on the ice. What does he do for the team and the dressing room when he gets himself back out there, obviously playing through injury?
Well, when you have team meetings on specific stuff, power play, system stuff, or breakouts, when he's there and you know he's playing, it really helps. It helps. You know, you can tell the other guys, you know, anytime you have a star player like that, it calms everybody down. So, we rely on him a lot. You know, we got to be careful we don't run on too much, but I think he just calms the waters down a little bit for even for the young guys.
What about the fact he's just kind of a courageous effort by him that's got to inspire the other?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's in the past, even since I've been here, he's played some games where he's been banged up. He's a courageous kid. You know, I don't care how big he is, and he plays through stuff, you know. Meyer is the same type of guy. I mean, for Meyer's not to play, it means he's really hurt. So we got some courageous guys here.
Quinn's been getting knocked around a bit, right? Quinn's been taking a lot of shots from guys. Are you happy with how your guys are protecting him or whatever? You know,
well, I think that's, you know, it's today's game. Do I want him to take the hits? No. I mean, he's got to be careful. But, you know, you could be team tough by a pack of wolves, I call it. Be hard on their best players. That's another thing. I mean, would I like to get? I wish I was playing. Yeah, but you know, we're more of a pack mentality, and you know, I tell our players, you know, not go after their best player, play their best players hard too. That's the way you got to do it. But no, we don't want him taking hits or getting taken advantage of. Absolutely not, 100%. We something that we'll have to address too down the road.
Phil, Roenick, and Dolan, maintenance day.
Yeah, Phil's a lot of minutes lately, and we just feel that I need to give him a day off. He's been playing a lot of hockey the last 10 games, and Garza's banged up.
What do you think and what do you hope that third period can do for your group? Not just the comeback, but the shot volume that we haven't really seen from your group. Like, can it unlock something to you then?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about moments. I'm a big moment guy, and you know, obviously we haven't got them. If you look at our game, third period, we had a lot of moments. Lanx makes a hell of a save on that Padre. It could be 4-2. They get a power play. They score. It's 4-2. We got a power play. And I know we didn't score, but we kept the puck in their end for 2 minutes, and they were gassed. Our next few shifts, we got a bunch of shots on net. Petey has the puck. He doesn't throw it away. He holds onto it. He makes a good play to the point. Mancini hits the net. He goes downhill. I mean, these are just moments that matter in a game. And we haven't been getting them. But does a third period, whether you say unlock it or build confidence, I think it does. And but you just got to be ready for those moments.
Thatcher back out there for part of practice today. What does that mean for his progression and potential timeline here?
Well, I think he did three drills, and I think the next practice, he might be full go next practice. I'm not 100% sure on that, but he felt pretty good today. So let's leave it at that.
Is it unfortunate that at this time of the year, your next practice might be in a week at this point?
That's the thing that sucks for injured guys or guys like them or even Hughes. They're not getting an October, November, December practice. You're getting it toned out. Like, you know, I go 25 minutes today. So that's the world we live in. So we're going to try to simulate as much as you can for Denver. But I can't, you know, for the sacrifice, the team, we got to, you know, you got to pick and choose your spots.
What does Zeri on June? I mean, I think we can understand wanting to hit a guy to go to a guy's head like that. Does it frustrate you that players still sort of that's the reaction when they go after a guy's back?
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard because, you know, listen, I grew up in an era where it's a brawl, right? Those days are over. But also, we're fighting for a playoff spot, so you go, you know, what's the line? We had a couple of guys go to their bench and say something, but, you know, we need 2 points. But saying that, if it's October, maybe it's different. I don't know. And obviously, we got to get that out of the game. You know, a clean hit's a clean hit, you know. you don't have to jump in for somebody because there's a clean hit. Sometimes you got to – I think somebody's made a comment, and it's true. Kadri got up, and I think he just went in the play. It wasn't like he was – you know, he took the hit. So but I understand he's a young kid. Kadri, he wants it, but I, obviously he can't hit a guy in the head like that. So.
You mentioned the old days, you see a lot of big suspensions. Do you think you need some big suspensions maybe?
Well, usually the best way is on pocketbook, right? I've been fined a bunch of times. It hurts your, it hurts the paycheck. Trust me. When you, especially when you don't make, we're making as much, but still, yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, it's, things in the head nowadays are more. It's very, it's a very sensitive thing, and I agree, because you know you're messing with somebody's career when you talk about the brain.
You would like to have seen those guys huddle, the four guys on the ice when the play happened. Do you think they could have done?
Who, the refs?
The officials. Yeah.
Well, I think those two, you know, I think those guys are good, those two guys are good referees. Actually, Chris Lee is a really good ref. Came to Eagles Talk. I actually didn't see a lot, and in all fairness, Chris, it's not like anybody went to him and said, but I what I'd like to see in a review, if you're wrong, you're wrong. So it takes, what, 20 seconds to go? So, yeah, I would like to see a review, but I'm not blaming Chris Lee. I mean, he's a really good ref. So we're going to have a meeting back at Rogers here in about an hour, and we'll kind of we've talked away at the game plan, and we'll make a decision here in the next hour or two and tell the goalie he's going to play tomorrow. That's the plan.
I know that, you know, the back-to-back thing with goalies never seems to happen these days. Do you think what do you think that is? It doesn't seem like, you know, you played in an era where guys played a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to affect
yourself. I think a different game, faster game. You know, maybe a little more stress on goalies nowadays. I think Lance did a hell of a job. For him to go play these next three games, I think that's maybe a little unfair to him. So we got to make a decision, yeah. Even though he'll do it, that's the type of guy he is. But, you know, you got to be smart, too. And you have to give confidence, too. Artie was in the playoffs last year for us, and we got to give him confidence as a group. If he plays the more, you know, we got to give him confidence, and so that's kind of our, you know, that'll be discussed in the next hour.
With the way you're playing defensively at the moment, is it a situation where you have a better environment for Artie to go into than maybe you did earlier in the year, and that could help him out?
I think that's a good point. I since Christmas, I've really liked our shot volume against. I think we're one of the better teams at giving it. We're not getting as many shots, but we're not giving the team a lot. So I'd like to reverse that a little bit, but I think that does help the stress on a goalie. I think it does.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet talking to the media after practice out at UBC, and always with the nice rink ambience at UBC. The puck's ringing off the boards there behind Rick Tocchet. Some updates, just, you know, as we mentioned earlier, Myers is a probable for tomorrow and the weekend. DPD is a full go. Interesting that DPD was dealing with the flu before the Calgary game, so he takes that knock in the head, and you're not really sure, okay, you're feeling some nausea. Is that because you have the flu, or is that because you have a concussion? But the fact that he's a full go seems to be very positive, obviously, for answering that it was, in fact, the flu and not concussion symptoms for Elias Pettersson. I thought it was very interesting also.
I like the honesty.
Yeah.
I appreciate the transparency on that.
Very much so. Hronik just needed a day off. Maintenance day, says Garland is banged up, but it was just a maintenance day, so it doesn't sound like his participation is in doubt tomorrow. I did like the answer he asked. He got asked if Quinn Hughes is at 80% right now, and he said, that's a good question, which to me is very telling that the answer is probably somewhat under 80% from what they're getting from Rick Tocchet. And the final one on Demko, said he did three drills today, might be a full participant in the next practice, but they're going to have to try to simulate as much as they can for Demko because so little practice time. And as he said, not just few days where you can practice here in the next run. Of course, they go out on a long road trip right after this set of back-to-backs, but also just he's having shorter practices. So a little bit tougher to ramp Demko up as quickly as they want in that environment, but Tocchet says that their next practice, Demko might be a full participant. On the goaltending question, not a confirmation from Tocchet, but, you know, Batch asked him just at the end there, hey, you guys have at least found maybe more of a solid defensive environment than you had earlier in the year. Now, we have seen Shelov start a couple of games recently. One of them went very, very poorly against the Anaheim Ducks. But does that maybe give you a little bit more confidence putting Shelov in net against Chicago? And Rick Tocchet had some time for that premise. And I know you've made the point that, man, if you can't trust him in this game, if you can't start your backup in this game and you're really tempted to go Lankinen back-to-back again, that says so much about what you think about Shelov. It sounds to me like there's a very good chance we see Shelov tomorrow against Chicago.
Yeah, they have to. Like, honestly, in some ways, there's a lot of conversation, and there has been a lot of conversation, a lot of backseat driving about Canucks goaltending choices, but I don't think they've done what wasn't obvious yet, and Shelov's tomorrow is obvious. You know, it, like, maybe if you're having a full morning skate tomorrow and Demko, but Demko can't be an option for Saturday.
No.
Could you get him into a full morning skate tomorrow? I mean, the fact that he left practice early today means that he's not close enough to get two practices and play on Sunday.
I don't think he's an option.
And I don't think you should, even if he were, do you want to throw him back into your actual most important game
against
down
Utah.
The stretch?
I don't think so.
Me neither.
No.
So you got to, and, you know, there's no room to ease Demko in either, right? Like, if Demko starts 6 to 7 more games down the stretch here, like, they need wins in those games badly. You're not going to go 7-0-0, but you need him to give you a chance to win every time he's in. So anyway,
I should mention, by the way, they have the Winnipeg home game before they go out on the road. I said they go out on the road after this weekend, but they got Winnipeg on Tuesday. Another very tough game.
That's the best team in hockey, man.
They're pretty good.
The most complete team anyway, like, they just have these nights where their stars aren't going, and it's like the Jets won 4-0 with goals from Kupari and Iafallo, and you know what I mean? Like, that Perfetti line is so nasty. Damn, they're good. Anyway, the overall look at the Canucks goaltending decisions here.
Mm-hmm.
You need to save Lankinen for Sunday. You give him basically 3 nights off, right? 3 effective nights off following back to back.
Yep.
So that gives you your best shot to win. You didn't have Lankinen in net the last time Utah beat you. You didn't have Quinn Hughes in the lineup the last time Utah beat you. So you can draw some confidence from that. You're going to have some tired legs. It's not easy to play a back to back. You know, one thing we haven't talked about a lot, like, Mancini comes in and has this great game. He's also the Canucks defender who hadn't played back-to-back. Right? There's an element to which if you have some guys in reserve, if you're able to change up your lineup just a little bit on the fringes, right? Instead of Neil Zaman playing as your 12th forward, you play
whomever. Mackey comes back in.
Perfect.
Yeah.
If there's changes you can make just to get a couple fresh sets of fresh legs in, you know, you probably want to. Maybe it's Forbert and Elias Pettersson flip-flop or something, and Amon and Lekkerimäki flip-flop, whatever. It makes sense to do that. Just reshuffle your deck even a little bit. And I think in net, if Shelov didn't play Saturday, I feel like that was the end of the line. Honestly, I feel like that was the end of the line for his prospects with this team. If you can't trust him to play against Chicago, you're never going to trust him again. You know, at least this preserves some flexibility for, like, Demko to get healthy. Shelov goes down. That Abbotsford team has played pretty good hockey for the last few months here. They're likely to make the playoffs. And then Shelov gets a chance to play some Calder Cup playoff hockey. And you have a good summer and you come into camp and, you know, at least you have a chance to restore some of your goalie of the future sheen.
Mm-hmm.
Although he won't be waiver exempt, right?
This is his
last waiver exempt season. So that becomes an issue then, too. Which is, even if Shelov performs too well down the stretch here, you might lose him. Right? You might be looking at dealing him for a 6th-round pick before the end of training camp next year.
Yep. Just where they drafted him.
Right.
6th round in 2019, a perfect hold over 6 years, if that's how it transpires.
Wow.
There you go.
That's depressing. There's something sad about that to me. I don't know what it is.
Oh, it would be really sad. This organization's had very high hopes for Arthur Shelov at various points.
For sure.
I don't know, Ian Clark is still with the organization, but obviously
in a scouting role,
not the position of power he once was, but I know he was very, very high on Arthur Shelov, and he's He had big moments for this team. He helped them win a playoff series against
Less
Nashville.
Than a year ago.
Yeah.
He had a shutout in a game to eliminate
That's true.
A playoff opponent, outdueling UC Soros.
Yeah. Less than a year ago.
So if you didn't play him, I think it was done.
He started opening night.
He did, yeah. He was this team's starter. All summer, people were talking about how this team was fine because of Shelovs.
Yeah. Yeah, they got to play him. And then even then, it's not like...
It's been 8 bad games. And he hasn't been bad in all of them.
He's been bad in a lot of them, though.
He's been bad in a lot of them.
He's been pretty bad.
Yes, he has.
650-650 is the Dunbar
Lumber text line. But it's still goaltending, man.
100%.
Demko's had like 6... non-quality. How many quality starts has Thatcher Demko had? You know what
this
I mean?
This year, yeah, I don't know.
And injury context, we know, like,
yeah.
I guarantee you can find an 8-game sample of Lankinen games that aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
That's how goaltending works.
And, yeah, it's just...
8 games doesn't make a career.
The process has looked so bad for Shelovs, is the thing. I'm not disagreeing with you. Like, it's still only 8 games, but the process has looked pretty rough for Shelovs.
Text comes in, Dranser, we all know Winnipeg is going to get blasted in round 2 like every year. Hellebuck, and then in all caps, sucks in the playoffs. I would like to see them minimize his starts down the stretch here,
yes.
Especially because he's basically already wrapped up the Vezina. You know what I mean? Like, the one problem that the Jets, I think, have with Hellebuck, and I think the major reason that he has this reputation, here's his starts the last 3 years, 60, 64, 66, mm-hmm. in the shortened season where they had only had 56 games, 45. You know what I mean? 58, 63, 67. My God, this guy. What a horse. That he is that good every year playing that load of games is wild stuff. Honestly, the only silver lining I would have taken from Team USA winning the Four Nations faceoff was that I am so sick of the this guy can't get it done in the playoffs for workhorse goaltenders whose teams don't mind their success. It's what I hated about the Luongo narrative 15 years ago. Before I was covering this team, when I was a fan, I was like, this is ridiculous. This guy plays more than everyone else, and it's a problem, and they shouldn't be doing it. When they have Corey Schneider, like, what are we doing? And, yeah, Hellebuck's fallen victim to the same thing. He's already played 50 games this year. He should only start, like, 7 more games the rest of the way.
Yeah,
they're fine. They're fine with whomever in net. They're fine with Comrie. Fine. Completely okay. Anyway.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can keep sending your thoughts in. Just before we take a break here, we were talking about who they should be targeting or what they should be targeting specifically. And in the last segment, Tanbeer texts in, I'd take my chances at Hedel being a 2C if you throw the bag at Mitch Marner. So Mitch Marner, if he hits unrestricted free agency, he's going to have a lot of suitors. I find picturing him leaving Toronto to come to Vancouver pretty tough.
Yeah.
Very tough to stay, like, to leave Toronto but stay in an ultra-intense Canadian market that doesn't happen to be your hometown. That would be that would qualify as an odd decision for me. I have no problem, in theory, with the Canucks heavily pursuing him. I just don't really know how realistic the path is.
Oh, you gotta go swing hard, though, at that Marner Ehlers tier.
The one that, yeah, Ehlers is the name that makes a lot more sense to me. Like, seems not, again, there's no guarantees in free agency. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, just go get Nick Ehlers. But it just seems a lot.
Aren't you having the same conversation with Nick Ehlers?
Yeah.
Why would he leave a fishbowl Canadian market to come to another?
Are we really calling Winnipeg a fishbowl? Really?
Well, fishbowls also don't have airports.
But also, I think it's different. Like, of course. You cannot compare the media scrutiny that Mitch Marner receives in Toronto with the scrutiny.
Oh, I don't
Nick
think
Ehlers.
I think Mitch Marner is the most scrutinized player yes. of the last decade.
Yes,
so I would say
Ehlers seems so much more plausible to me than Mitch Marner. Would be cheaper as well. If there's one guy I'm circling and saying I'm taking a run at him in the offseason, it's probably Nick Ehlers.
Bet they both end up in low tax states in the United States.
Probably the case. Warm weather, low tax states. Yeah.
That should be the betting favorite on both.
All right, we'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
I want to note, though, I'm team Mitch Marner for sure. That would be sick. I'm team Nikolaj Ehlers, too.
Yeah,
definitely. You got to take your absolute best shot at all of those level of guys. Bennett,
100%.
Marner, Ehlers. Bennett's not in the same tier, but
no.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. As mentioned, Dmitry Filipovich joins us next here for the PDO Report with Dmitry Filipovich. He's the host of the PDO Cast on the Sportsnet Radio Network. That is the final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next year on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintex studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. A final segment of the week here, and you know what that means. Dmitry Filipovich in studio. He is the host of the Hockey PDO Cast, which you can hear, of course, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, and he joins us now. What's going on, Dim?
Fellas, it's always a great way to end the week, start the weekend strong, get to sit here beside Thomas as he sweats his college basketball bets. Yeah. It's a good time.
I was going to say, do you have thoughts on how many points Tennessee and Texas are going to combine to score?
Well, Tom has the under, and so he's the first person in basketball history to be like, oh, why are these guys playing so well? This is such a fast-paced.
This is such a fast-paced, well-executed offensive game.
Yeah,
driving me nuts.
These guys are all making shots.
Yeah, they're playing too fast, and their sets are too good.
They're too crisp.
Yeah.
I asked Drantz what the number he had for the under, and he was like, I won't even tell you. It's already dead. So who knows? Who knows what it was?
It's sub 140.
Oh, you can still hit that.
Yeah.
It's dead.
All right.
But thank you. I appreciate your confidence in me.
Well, no, it's normal.
Or your lack of confidence in SEC basketball
that's
players.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Never doubt the... Somebody just launched an airball. Never doubt the ability of college basketball players to chuck up some absolute bricks long stretches.
I'll be honest with you, that airball gave me life.
You're back. You're back, baby. All right. Busy schedule coming up for the Vancouver Canucks here over the next week. Obviously, the two games on the weekend. Winnipeg on Tuesday, and then they head out on a long East Coast road trip. So let's go through it. We don't have to spend too long on Chicago, one of the worst teams in the NHL. They lose to the Sharks last night. I do want to get your take on Connor Bedard, though, because obviously so much hype as a prospect, and it feels like so much of the conversation around him this year has been very, very negative.
Yep.
Now, I get the conversation around the Blackhawks being negative. It's been joyless. It's been a slog. They lose a lot. There's not a lot of talent on the roster. I completely understand all of that. I do think that has clouded people's judgment of Connor Bedard a little bit and like fallen into the classic trap where everything wrong with a team must principally be the fault of like the most high profile player on the team. And that happens to be Connor Bedard. So I'm not saying there's no truth to it. He's a young player. Of course he needs to learn things, but how do you kind of view this season for Connor Bedard in the context of what it means for the rest of his career?
Yeah. He needs to hire Macklin Celebrini's PR team. Every video you see of the Sharks on off the ice, it's like him and Will Smith having a great time. Like he's on William Eklund's shoulders.
Yeah.
Like hanging out with Tyler Toffoli, like just having the best time while they're 32nd in the league.
I saw one today. He was like driving a cart around on the ice at their team photo day. Like you're right.
No one's having more fun.
No one's having more fun. Don't look at the standings,
but no one's having more fun. Meanwhile, Connor Bedard is in absolute hell. I mean, listen, it's been a miserable season. He has a complete lack of talent around him for the most part. I will say the first couple games we've seen, obviously not last night notwithstanding against San Jose, but Spencer Knight, I think, has infused them with a little bit of hope for the future in terms of having a legitimate high upside goalie there. They need to make some big moves this offseason. They're going to have a ton of cap space. We've heard them. They were linked to Mikko Rantanen while he was still an impending UFA before he signed with Dallas. I imagine they're going to be hot on Mitch Marner. They have a lot of money to spend. It would make sense. Like, they just need to bring in guys who can keep up with him, who can make life a bit easier for him, who can help him convert more of these shots into goals. And I imagine that'll happen. Like, they have a pretty short window here while he's on his ELC to like make sure the development runs smoothly.
Yep.
Everyone's happy. He signs long term and stays there for his entire prime. And so
only one more year on his ELC, which is wild. So
I know.
Just over a year away from being eligible. Oh, no. Is he eligible this year for an extension?
This offseason?
Yeah, he is. Wow.
You'd think they'll push to get it done.
I would think so. You'd think you'd want to try to get that one done. On Chicago, just more generally, they are quickly becoming the new cautionary tale for any team that might want to rebuild. And I do think that's even unfair because they went so far beyond normal rebuilding, probably the most aggressive teardown
like full scorched earth,
we've seen in the NHL. For teams that are considering a rebuild, and not quite to the degree that Chicago did, but just any sort of rebuild, what would be the one thing you would say, do this, do X differently than what Chicago did?
I don't think there's necessarily one kind of cut and dried way to do it properly. We've seen teams retool on the fly, take a couple steps back, but still keep veterans in place. I think both can work. I think one of their shortcomings has been just like how they've utilized the cap space, right? They've sort of taken teams off the hook, taken contracts for no reason, really not gotten a ton of assets in return. The players, the veterans they spend money on, it was Taylor Hall, who obviously, I mean, he tore his ACL, but he didn't have a lot of trade value by the time they did move him. Guys like Foligno, Pat Maroon, like they haven't really brought in a Tyler Toffoli type, for example, who can come in and be off the ice, doing all these sleepovers and making sure the vibes are good, but actually on the ice still being productive and like a legitimate top six player for them to play with. So you'd hope that you'd see more of that from both them and any future rebuilding team. But look at the Sharks. I mean, it's still, this is the easiest part of the rebuild, right? Kind of tearing it down, just being bad, getting top five picks for a couple of years. But what Mike Greer's done in getting Jake Walman, getting a second just take his contract, having him play top pair minutes, and then spinning him into a future first. They've done really creative stuff to maximize, I guess, their accumulation period of assets. We'll see if those hit and pay dividends.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because for all of the talk of like, wow, San Jose, they're having such a fun year and Chicago's so miserable. Like, Chicago's a better record than San Jose still. And you get one like free year, right? Where it's all that matters is the vibes. And hey, Macklin Zilberini's having fun and Will Smith's having fun. Next year, not that you have to challenge for the playoffs or anything, but like the vibes only persists for like we'll only sustain a fan base and organization for 1 year. So it's going to be interesting to see if San Jose can move beyond just the vibes.
Sure. But you can make progress and still have vibes.
Oh, sure. But I'm saying it can't just be vibes.
No.
You know what I mean? That's a 1 year thing.
But you also what you really can't have is where it gets embarrassing like it did for the Sharks a year ago.
Yes.
You need and unfortunately it has too often for the Chicago Blackhawks. Like, one of the major differences I think between the Sharks and the Blackhawks is in Warsawski you've got at least a level of like accountability. You watch that team play, they seem to play the right way, they seem to be baseline organized, and I don't know that you've had enough of that in Chicago with Richardson and then the coaching change. And then, like, for me, that's key. You've got to have a coach who at least can be like a credible face of organizational competence on the ice, even if you're not going to get results for a few years.
Also, the difference between the two is like it seems like the Blackhawks for the most part are trying to be competent and failing, whereas like the Sharks have 25 or something one goal losses. Like, they've blown a bunch of games they probably could have won, which is a sign of a young team, but also one that's not really necessarily pushing all in to compete this year. They actively made the most important position worse in trading Blackwood for Georgiev, and that's cost them a few games along the way as well. So, like, the Sharks are, I think, much closer than maybe the standings would indicate, not necessarily to competing or being a playoff team, but being competent and not doing it in an embarrassing way. So I think that is an important distinction between the two in terms of the context of it. But yeah, you're right. Like, last year, I think everyone was like, all right, whatever, the Blackhawks suck.
Yeah,
but it's Connor Bedard's a rookie.
Rookie year, go out, have
enjoy
some fun.
His glow, for sure. It's a shiny new toy. Now, all of a sudden, you have expectations of development. That's going to happen for the Sharks next year. We have seen, though, unlike Bedard doesn't really have this luxury. Will Smith, for example, started really slow as a rookie, was struggling adjusting to from the NCAA. He's looked way better. He's over a point a game for the past month or so.
Yeah, improvement.
Much improved. William Eklund's still a young player who's still developing with these guys. Obviously, you know, they draft Dickinson high last year. They're going to have another top four pick again this year. So, like, there are building blocks there beyond just celebrating to insulate them and make sure that everyone's kind of moving in the right direction at the same time.
What I'd say, though, is for the Sharks anyway, like, Tomáš Hertl's going to remain on their books forever but Carlson's on their books for three more years. Brent Burns only comes off their books this year. Logan Couture has 3 years left, and Vlasic has 2 years left. Like, you know, the Sharks are, to their credit, honestly, a team that went extreme one way and extreme the other way, right? And I think that's okay. Like, it's okay that the Sharks did everything they could, the Evander Kane trade, the on and on, even when it stopped working, to try and keep their cup window open just, like, absolutely as long as possible, especially given that they had the best record in hockey across a 15-year span. Like, that it's worth this pain that, and they're accumulating at a good rate while enduring this pain, and it's not that bad to watch.
Well, and even their last gasp was, what, 2018, mm-hmm. when they made the Carlson trade, they brought in Kane, and that team was remarkable, and then just everyone got injured and they lost to the Blues in the conference final. So, like, at least it was a calculated decision on their part, understanding that this was going to be the domino that fell.
Yeah.
They have so many opportunities, though, not to turn this into a full Sharks podcast, but I've been thinking about it a lot, especially after the deadline. Like, there's such an obvious fit for Dougie Hamilton, for example, this summer. If the Devils decide, because they paid Kovacevic, they have Pesci.
Would they pay you to take him?
It might just be like a future considerations type of deal, honestly. Like, we'll see how desperate they get, but they're kind of in a bind now, especially if they want to keep Nemitz and view him as one of the right shot defensemen they're going to have there. Keandre Miller was an RFA, and the Rangers haven't seemed to want to pay. Like, a couple picks, get him. There's a lot of creative stuff that they can do to bring in guys who are still around their prime to make this team much better next year without necessarily, like, having to sacrifice anything. So, yeah, I think the possibilities for the Sharks are much more expansive, I guess, than the Blackhawks right now.
All right, Canucks play, follow that up with Utah on Sunday. Our listeners know all about the Utah Hockey Club.
Yes.
Probably more than most fans in Utah, to be perfectly honest, if you're listening to our show and their fleet of young, talented forwards. Are you as high on Utah as Drantz is?
Oh, even higher.
All right, let's go.
Oh, yeah, we've been locked
in.
We
found someone higher on Utah than Drantz. Incredible.
I mean, how could you not be? So Gunther missed about a month or so.
You either are or you're not watching.
Yeah, you either are or you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. The standings have been slow to reflect it, but it's happening. Like, they're within striking distance now. The past month, they've been a top 3 5-on-5 team. They have a top 10 power play. Pamelka's playing well in net for them. They've had a ton of one-goal losses. Young team, it happens, as we just said, with the Sharks. But all of their underlying numbers suggest that they're clearly the cream of the crop in this Western Conference wildcard race. We'll see if that bears out by season's end in the standings. But you have to love the way they're playing and sort of every underlying process along the way for them.
They're also outright fun. Like, if you're watching hockey every night, you'll eventually just start gravitating to teams that are fun to watch play, that play fast, that generate scoring chances, that defend with speed, that have, like, freakish attributes up and down their lineup. Like, the Utah Hockey Club has this third line with Doan, McBain, and Lawson Krause. And Krause is, like, not my favorite player archetype by any means, but he's just a massive guy who skates fast and crushes you and can finish if he's perfectly set up in front of the net. And McBain can set him up, and then you've got Doan, who's kind of a buzzsaw, very much unlike his dad, right? He's not a big hulking power forward. He's almost more like a Garland or a Hoglander type, but with more sort of physical juice because he's bigger than that. That line, like, people would be singing songs about that line. The amount of bad nickname suggestions we'd have into the inbox right now if that was a Canucks line, through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, McBain opens a lot of possibilities. We've been doing this for so long. Remember the offseason?
Yeah, McBain was my guy.
No, but you remember the offseason when we were tracking Shane Doan to Vancouver? Was that the lockout year? It was like every day we were working for Canucks Army and we were like putting out posts being like, this is what Shane Doan said today.
Remember the Sasquatch?
aggregating for every sure. day.
The Sasquatch photos of Shane Doan breaking bread with, like, Gillis, Gilman, and Aquilini at the Italian kitchen.
Yeah, those are dark times.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I feel like we probably could have been spending our time doing better things. Tracking the end of the twilight of Shane Doan's career.
Look at you guys now.
Yeah, that's true.
So Shane Doan was still good for a few years after that. He would have been an awesome fit.
Yeah, if you ever wonder whether we've paid our dues. We put in some hard hours tracking Shane Doan flights, Shane Doan's updated schedules, everything.
Oh, man. Shane Doan is the best, luckily. The absolute best dude. And I once had the opportunity to interview him about that about that dinner, and he said, "We ate at Italian Kitchen, and it was beautiful. I've eaten there 4 or 5 times since. Man, I love that place."
There you go. What an endorsement.
Also, good Vancouver Province headline. Pass the penne and hold the salary.
Oh, boy. Trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
All right. Let's whip through the other couple of teams here. Winnipeg. Durant's called them the best team in the NHL. Agree?
They've certainly played like it this regular season. I think that's undeniable. They have a game tonight, I believe, against the Stars, which should be a really fun one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see that. The Luke Shen edition didn't seem like a big one. I certainly would have loved to see them do something more aggressive at the deadline. What it did accomplish, though, was bumping Logan Stanley, who was clearly their weakest link, out of the lineup. So I think that's a net positive for them. Yeah, we'll see. They obviously would do well to tone down Connor Hellebuck's usage here down the stretch, especially with their spot atop the West solidified. Yep. But heading in, they have very few weaknesses. They play so well as a team. You see that continuity, those guys having been there together for so long. And yeah, there's very few holes to poke in their resume beyond the fact that they haven't really done it yet and they have that playoff baggage. And so I imagine this is going to be a big opportunity for them this season to try and address all that.
All right. And St. Louis, I mean, are you as disdainful of the Blues as Drance is?
They've grown on me a little bit. Like, they've obviously played much better since the coaching change, both in terms of their place in the standings, but also the underlying numbers.
They're scoring like crazy.
Their defensive environment has improved quite a bit. Like, Jim Montgomery is just a really good coach. Yep. And so they brought him in, and he's adjusted a lot of the stuff. They have a lot of personnel flaws, but they're playing much better. They're all of a sudden in this race when I thought they had no business being in it based on where they were earlier. And so, yeah, we'll see. I think the short-term ceiling for them is still quite low, because they've sort of boxed themselves in with this roster and how much money they're spending on the veteran defensemen in particular. But they have guys like Kyrou and Thomas, and we've seen what Broberg and Holloway have done for them this season. And so it's not like they're completely devoid of talent by any means. I think they have a legitimate shot in this race.
What should we draft? Should we draft legendary almost Canucks? Legendary future Canucks like Shane Doan?
I'm actually cool with that. That sounds fun.
I don't know if we have the depth.
Marion Gaborik.
Well, yeah, we can't just start naming them.
Well, what do you mean?
Because we're going to draft them.
Oh, okay. I was going to help you guys out.
Like, yeah, I don't have like an extensive
Shea
draft
Weber?
Board.
Well, fine. We'll just name
Jamie
some.
Ben.
We'll remember some guys and then we'll draft something.
Are we including
Paul
David
Kariya?
Are we including David Backes?
Paul Kariya and Timu Solani.
Wait, who's the right pick?
Of what?
The right overall, first overall pick.
Is it Paul Kariya because he would have brought Timu Solani?
No. Number, there's one correct pick for almost Canuck.
Is it Wayne Gretzky?
It's Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, he's fallen down my draft board recently.
Wow.
It's slipping. Some character concerns have cropped up.
Yeah, soon he's not even going to be the leading goal scorer in NHL history.
That's true.
Not that impressive.
What a bum.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
We're joking.
Gretzky, good guy.
So Gretzky, I think, is number one.
Easily.
Weber. Paul Kariya, Marion Gaborik.
I'm putting Shea Weber number two, by the way.
Okay.
Just because he would have been the most beloved Canuck of all time.
We need one more defenseman to round out like this.
A lineup?
The lineup, the starting five. I don't know. I can't think of another one that was like
an almost Canuck.
Yeah, we're always fantasizing about this guy donning Canucks colors.
Yeah.
It's tough. If anyone can remember one,
PK Subban?
Yeah, I mean, there's tampering. That's a good one. I like that. All right. PK Subban and Shea Weber. Fantastic.
Two righties.
I don't care. Let's go. All right. Do we have something we can actually draft?
Why don't we draft days of the week? We got a text in that said this.
You know there's only 7 days in the week, right, Tom?
We got a good text in that said this.
Ooh, Olli Jokinen is another one that comes to mind.
Mm. Why Olli Jokinen?
Because there was always rumors that they were going to trade various things to Florida for Olli Jokinen. Look it up.
I will. Someone texted us in to say, Drance, you have a take on everything. Does the week begin on Sunday or end on Sunday?
Well,
I strongly feel it ends on Sunday.
Well, so, okay. But this is like there's a real answer to this question. It's not a debate. The first day of the week is Sunday, technically, right? So it's like there's a by rule it's Sunday. By the spirit of how we live our lives,
yes.
It's Monday.
Yeah.
So it just depends which one you want. But there's no debate.
Yeah, there's a debate.
No, there isn't.
Monday is the first day of the week, says calendar.com, according to international standards for the representation of dates and times.
Is that an official source?
And it's an official start. Okay, sorry. Per Wikipedia, there's something involving Geneva here. The Geneva-based ISO standards organization uses Monday as the first day of the week in its ISO week date system through the international ISO 8601 standard. Most of Europe and China consider Monday the first day of the week, while North America, Israel, South Asia, and many Catholic and Protestant countries consider Sunday the first day of the week. Sorry that I'll go with the universalist standard while you harken back to your superstitious...
I'm a good Canadian boy.
Where do we live, though?
We live in Canada.
Exactly.
We live in the real world, where we're not going to, out of deference to the church, say that, yeah, the week starts Sunday at church.
Drance is choosing this time to come out in favor of the one world government.
Okay,
so he's unveiling his new shtick as really quickly, globalist Drance.
Really quickly, we each get two picks. Jamie, you pick first. You're second. I'm third.
Saturday.
We're picking days of the week.
Saturday.
Okay.
Oh, Friday. Easy first pick.
Wow. Sunday is great value. I get football, baby.
So are you drafting the final day of the week or the first day of the week?
I'm drafting the final day of the week, Sunday.
Is Sunday the first day of the week available as a pick?
No, it's the best value on the board. Sunday. I'm taking Sunday, the last day of the week, and I will add... So you picked
Saturday.
Well, Thursday, easy pick.
Yeah, Thursday is a pretty good pick. I Wednesday, obviously.
So wow, why Wednesday?
I have no time for Tuesday. I don't know. Wednesday, you feel, hump day, you feel like you're getting...
Wednesday's the worst
day
of the week.
Getting closer to
the
end of the week.
That's the one that should have gone undrafted.
So, no.
Wednesday's a UDFA, and it's not even getting a contract.
I'm secretly getting great value here with Monday.
No way.
Monday, the most frequent, other than Friday, day you get as part of a long weekend.
Yeah, but Monday long weekend days, as we all know, suck.
Because it's just Sunday.
Yeah, it feels like an extra Sunday. You don't still don't want to go out on Sunday. All long weekends should begin on Friday because Thursday, my Derek day, is secretly one of the best days of the week to go out. No one wants to go out on Sunday.
But you forget, I'm a parent. I'm not going out and drinking anyways. That's irrelevant to me. I just want the day off.
So you just enjoy two versions of the Sunday scaries.
Yes.
Hate it.
Jamie, I don't have the Sunday scaries because I love my work.
It's like woohoo, I get an extra Sunday, but there's no football on. That sucks.
Jamie gets Monday Night Football.
That's true. I get Monday Night Football and the holidays.
And here's my argument for Wednesday. You wake up in the morning, you check your phone, waiver wires have processed, and that's arguably the best day of the week for four months.
We all truly just drafted based on the NFL schedule. Good for us. I'm like, we won't be slaves to religion, we'll be slaves to the NFL.
Plus, we're getting Wednesday Night Football at some point in the next few years.
Right.
I love these.
In an international destination.
I love that we got a listener who texted in for the first time ever. Never agreed with Drance so strongly. Monday is the first day of the week.
Sunday is
the weekend, key part being end. That's from Sepp in Vancouver. That was the first time he chose to text into the station. All right, we'll wrap it up there. Enjoy the games over the weekend. I'm not back on Monday. I'm on the morning show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, so Josh will be in with Drance on Canucks Talk next week, Sportsnet 650.